You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Ransomware hits companies in France and the U.S. A Finnish energy company sustains a suspicious IT incident. Turkey jams social media as it rolls tanks against the Kurds. Pegasus spyware is said to be in use against Moroccan activists. Silent Librarian is still making noise. The Lazarus Group is back with a malign crypto trading app. China tightens its cyber laws. And the EU privately warns itself that, yes, companies like Huawei are a security risk. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, October 15th, 2019. In incidents that give point to recent Europol and FBI warnings about the ransomware threat, two major companies, one in the U.S. and the other in France, have sustained significant ransomware attacks. Connecticut-based shipping and postage metering company Pitney Bowes disclosed yesterday morning that it had sustained a serious ransomware attack. The company believes that customer data were not compromised and that the consequence of the attack will be confined to service disruptions. Group M6, the largest media company headquartered in the Parisian suburbs, also disclosed an attack over the weekend, and L'Express calls it ransomware. Group M6 programming continued, but some business and customer contact functions were degraded. There's no evidence so far that the attacks are connected. In neither case has the ransomware strain or a threat actor been publicly identified. Another major company, Finland's Neste Oil, that country's principal oil and gas producer and alternative energy company, sustained an incident late Friday that disrupted operations. It's unclear at this time whether Neste was the victim of a cyber attack or simply suffered an IT glitch, but the incident does look suspicious and will bear watching. Turkish authorities have interdicted social media along the Syrian border in support of an offensive against Kurdish forces, Wired reports. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and WhatsApp were blocked for about 48 hours. Social media have served as significant command and control channels for insurgents around the world. The Turkish attacks, conducted on the ground by conventional heavy forces, occur as the U.S. announced pullouts of troops from northern Syria. The U.S. has condemned the attacks, which Turkey maintains are legitimate self-defense against the threat of Kurdish insurgency, and has imposed a range of sanctions against Ankara. It is, of course, the tanks and infantry that drew the sanctions, not the ISP's takedown of social media. But conventional operations in Syria can be expected to be accompanied by cyber operations. Moroccan authorities appear to be using Pegasus spyware, a tool produced by NSO Group, to monitor dissidents. Ars Technica reports that two prominent Moroccan human rights activists received SMS messages that sought to induce them to download Pegasus onto their devices. NSO Group told Ars that, as is the case with any lawful intercept product, it's possible that Pegasus can be misused, and that NSO Group is investigating the incident with a view to taking appropriate action. NSO Group has been criticized for making its tools available to governments they might have foreseen would abuse them. It's undeniably true that software like Pegasus has legitimate and even life-saving uses, but critics say that NSO Group's products seem to be particularly likely to fall into the hands of repressive or irresponsible governments. German company Greenbone Networks recently conducted research examining the exposure of medical imaging data online. The CyberWire's Carol Terrio files this story.
With me today is Dirk Schrader, a cyber resilience architect at Greenbone Networks. Now, I've asked Dirk onto the show to share his recent findings from a Green Room report. So health providers around the world store medical images, so things like x-rays and scans and the like, and a lot of them use the same protocol. This is known as DCOM, or Digital Imaging and Communications in Medicine. And this makes it easy for surgeons or consultants or diagnosticians or any medical professional to access the files. Dirk, thank you so much for making time to come on the show today. So let me guess, you led this research to see if there was any issues in how the data was stored, and you found out that everything was tip-top and there was no problems at all, I imagine.
Well, thanks for having me here today. First of all, no, it's not all in good shape. The details we found are really concerning. So we've analyzed about 2,300 systems. Found that 590 of them are completely unprotected and connected to the internet, which is a major mistake in itself.
There was no password or encryption or anything.
Think of it like being connected to a browser, just that the browser is specialized to view medical images.
Right.
No protection at all.
Yep. So this is kind of concerning for people like me, because obviously this is incredibly sensitive information. Tell me, were there PII involved as well as the images?
Yes, there were. We've seen names, date of birth, date of examination, reasons for examinations. We have had access to images related to that exam. Sometimes the patient data was sort of identified by social security numbers. There was lots of personal and identifiable information in it, yes.
Oof.
We have informed ProPublica and the German TV broadcaster about our findings just because of the massive scale of the problem.
Right.
Plus, it was important to have media coverage to alert people about the problem, and in the same way to contact the authorities in the various countries to resolve the problem.
So this problem is rather huge. How can you inform everyone to take a look at how their medical data is being stored and what they should do to make it safer?
Yeah, exactly. That's the point.
So what I read from your report is you found something like 24 million data records that were improperly protected and stored.
Yes.
And that's huge.
That includes 700 million images related to that 24 million patient records, and 400 million of them were actually accessible. Really, click on them and you see them.
Wow. Now tell me, who's the worst country?
The worst country, let's say the top five are US, Brazil, India, Turkey, and South Africa.
US is up in the top five?
Yes.
Why do you think that is? I mean, it's always going on about how cyber resilient they are as a nation. Were you surprised by that?
Actually not, because in preparation for this research, we did another research asking critical national infrastructure providers about their approach to cyber resilience, and we found out that only one third globally said, oh, we consider ourselves cyber resilience, and the other two thirds are considering themselves not to be cyber resilient.
I know, but you know, there are seriously huge laws out there. There's HIPAA, there's GDPR. Do you think they've taken your alert seriously, or do you see changes being made?
We do see changes being made. We do see, on the other hand, also countries not reacting at all, at least from what we can see. I'm not sure about the internal progressing there. For me, the most important thing here to highlight is we are so much focused on attacks that we forget to look at ourselves and our capabilities to withstand, to be resilient.
You know, the scary thing that occurs to me here is if someone nefarious got their hands on this data, it would be an exquisite way to get information from a social engineering or phishing point of view.
Yeah. Definitely. Whether you have a spine problem, whether you have had X-rays or CTs, MRTs for cancers, which can be inferred from the data because a certain circumstance in your personal life, and use that against you.
Can I just say, I am very happy you guys invested in this research because I, and I'm sure everyone else out there, want this fixed ASAP. You've been listening to Dirk Schrader from Greenbone. Again, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
This was Carol Theriault for the CyberWire.
Proofpoint has issued another report on Silent Librarian. The Iranian threat group also tracked as Cobalt Dickens and TA-407. Silent Librarian, associated with Iran's Mabna Institute, targets universities through phishing campaigns that make heavy use of spoofed university brands and library-themed fish bait. The objective appears to be intellectual property theft. Silent Librarian fishes for its prospects with emails telling the recipients that they need to renew their library privileges, return overdue material, and so on. North Korea's Lazarus Group has renewed its deployment of an Apple backdoor against cryptocurrency exchanges. Malware Hunter team alerted researchers to the activity Friday. It was further examined by researcher Patrick Wardle, who sees the malware as a variant of the Apple Juice operation Kaspersky described in August. In this round, the Lazarus Group is again using a front company, JMT Trading, to upload malicious code to GitHub. The backdoor is embedded in code that purports to be an innocent cryptocurrency trading app. Trade if you must, speculators, but please do so with appropriate caution. Evidently feeling confident and frisky after having dunked on the NBA last week, Beijing has enacted a range of laws that give the government superuser access to devices in the country and that mandate extensive data sharing from companies who wish to do business in China. The famously privacy-sensitive Apple, known for pointing out while looking across Silicon Valley at Google, that if you're not paying for the product, you are the product, has itself been providing data on users in China to Tencent, a Chinese conglomerate that's about as remote from the Chinese government as Huawei. Speaking of Huawei, the European Commission last week released a public report that, while not saying it in so many words, was nonetheless read as a warning about Huawei. The Wall Street Journal has now broken the story that there was a second, non-public warning circulated among European governments that was more direct and less ambiguous. The most striking part of the account is the reported inference that there's no easy technical fix or vetting that's likely to mitigate the risk. A source told the journal, quote, "These vulnerabilities are not ones which can be remedied by making small technical changes, but are strategic and lasting in nature."
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI.
And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute and also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Great to have you back, Joe.
It's good to be back, Dave.
Joe, we got a letter from a listener that I wanted to share because I know this is something that's near and dear to your heart. Mm-hmm. The letter goes like this. He says, "Hi, Dave. Here's a big picture issue I'd like to just throw out there to you. Years ago, I thought I wanted to weld for a living. After doing it for a few years, I realized most well-paying and secure jobs required extensive travel and several years away from home and family. So I decided to go back to school and earn my associate's in cybersecurity. Now I see the cybersecurity industry making the same mistake the welding industry has made. Very few companies want to hire people like me who are inexperienced but ambitious. Most jobs under an entry-level search require a bachelor's degree and at least 5 years of experience. My main point is this. If companies want to secure their own future, they need to begin investing now in more raw talent. It's okay for them to ask for experienced professionals. I realize some jobs truly require years of experience. But start hiring more new people and invest in them. Don't just ask for the best people, because eventually, with the way it's heading, the future's best won't be very good. We need experience to get a job, but need a job to get experience. I don't mean to rant, Dave. It just makes me disappointed to see this happening to such a large and important industry. I'm not just sad for me. I'm sad for what I know the future will look like unless companies change their view of this issue." Joe, your response? Go on.
Exacerbated. Exasperated. Yeah. Go on. Dave, this is an issue that is near and dear to my heart. You're 100% correct about this. And not only that, but it's something that really, really gets my dander up, let's say.
All right.
Entry level in cybersecurity is not 5 years of experience. Mm-hmm. Someone with 5 years of experience in cybersecurity is not even considering your entry level position. You need to change what you're looking for. What you're looking for is smart people who can learn quickly and who work well in teams. That's what you're looking for in cybersecurity entry-level positions. You're not looking for people with CISSPs, which I have seen even recently. Nobody with a CISSP is looking at a job that pays less than six figures. You're going to have to accept that as a fact.
Why do you think we see this so much? In other words, what are they... It seems to me like there's some gaming of the system or attempt to game the system going on here. Do you think they're just putting it out there, trying to find someone who's willing to be underpaid?
I think that they're trying to. It's one of three things. It's like you're suggesting, greed, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to get the best person for the lowest amount of money.
Right. Nothing wrong with that, I suppose. If you're running a business. That's,
right. But
that's
let me
business.
Explain something to you again. I mean, this is interesting information.
Yeah.
There are 300,000 open security positions in the United States right now.
Okay.
And I can't remember where I got this information from, but I just researched it just a couple days ago. I'm speaking off the top of my head.
Yeah.
There are 700,000 people working in the field right now. That means that close to one third of the jobs in this industry are not filled. And the people that are here in these positions right now are not going to fill them. All you're doing is looking for these experienced people. You're poaching from other positions.
Right, you're just shuffling people around.
Mm-hmm. We need to get new people into these positions. We need to get new people like this listener who's taken the initiative, gone out and gotten an associate's degree in cybersecurity. This guy is an ideal candidate for an entry-level position.
So why, in an industry that is, I would hazard to say, cash rich,
right?
Why not invest in the new talent? Why not invest in those, invest in your company?
Right.
Why not?
Well, so the greed is the first one. Mm-hmm. I think ignorance is the second reason this happens.
All right.
People just don't make the effort to understand what is an entry-level position in cybersecurity. They think, an entry-level position at working in the loading dock is 5 years of experience. Therefore, an entry-level position working in cybersecurity is 5 years of experience. Mm. No, that's not the case. You're dealing with two completely different sets of skills.
Okay.
Right? And the other one, I think, is fear. People are afraid to hire new people. You're going to have to get over that fear and hire new people. Hire new people and help grow their skills and understand that part of your team is going to have to consist of absolute newbies in this field and that they're going to have to be part of your team of security people. Companies are just going to have to make the investment in new people, and that's just the way it is. And if you're really not willing to make the investment, then be prepared to have that position unfilled for a very long time. Just get used to when your boss asks you, why don't you have that position filled? You should tell them it's because I don't understand how to fill that position and I'm not good at doing my job.
I can tell, Joe, this is something that you feel strongly about.
It is something that irritates me all the time. I hear this from so many people. This is not the first time I've heard this complaint. I've gotten some certification. I've gotten an associate's degree. I'm ready to get into the field. I'm ready to start working. I'm ready to get my hands dirty. But nobody will hire me.
Right.
Why won't people hire these people?
And yet they're out there hearing that people can't fill the positions.
Right, and
they're
yet we're hearing there's 300,000 open positions in this country alone, globally 1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't fill the positions because you're not willing to hire the right people. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Take a chance.
Yep, take a chance.
Roll the dice.
Yep.
All right. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpe, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the dark net, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.